2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com, follow us on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielle Soleil puts this game away!
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great. University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
All right, welcome into another edition of the Jazz Notes Podcast. My name is Cleon Wall, and Ben Anderson is joining me here. And we appreciate you listening to the Jazz Notes Podcast. Make sure you download, subscribe, let us know what you think about the Jazz Notes Podcast. We are an eighth of the way through the season. I know that sounds really dumb, Ben, but I wanted to frame it that way. We're an eighth of the way through the season. Hey, woo!
Hey, 10 games in.
Yeah.
That's a decent sample size.
Yeah, we actually know a little bit about this team, so that's what we wanted to talk about today. We wanted to talk about what we know about this team. Or are we surprised? Were our thoughts or impressions of this team so far, are they kind of right on? Or are we kind of disappointed with some of these guys? And I know you have some ideas on this. First of all, 10 games into the season, what do you think? How do you think this team has performed? Me, personally, I would probably say I'm only disappointed really in one game. You could talk about the offense of rebounding in the Clippers game, but I still kind of expected them to lose that game.
Yeah.
So if I'm just looking at his total record, other than the game against the Kings, I think it's kind of pretty right on. I think they've kind of met expectations, at least my expectations.
7-3 through 10 games. Yeah, you probably thought you were going to lose one of the two Clippers games, and you did. No, you got lucky. You won one of them, and Kawhi didn't play, and Paul George hasn't played yet, though he should debut this week. And then you lost the second game of the season on the road at the Lakers. It's probably okay. And then, yeah, you've had one bad loss along the way. That's probably pretty understandable, too, because you have more good wins, like winning on the road at Phoenix, than I think you do bad losses, which was even then losing to Sacramento on the road when they were winless on the season. Teams don't lose 82 games. Like, they're going to find a way to win a game, and playing teams on streaks gets dicey. Eventually, it was just going to happen, and it did happen. And sure, you'd love to have it back. You'd love to be 8-2, but if you were to offer the Jazz 7-3 before the season started through 10 games, they would have taken it, and I think Jazz fans should too.
And as you probably know, we are recording this before the Jazz take on the Brooklyn Nets, which should be an interesting game in and of itself. So if you listen to this afterward, make sure you go to kslsports.com, check out our coverage of the Jazz and Brooklyn Nets. All right, so we talked about the record. Let's talk about the big guys now, the big guns on this team. Let's start off with Donovan Mitchell. Surprised, right on track, or disappointed? I'm going to go with surprised. I want to hear what you have to say, though.
I am surprised. I guess I'll say surprised if we're putting it in those categories.
Or whatever you want to say. You don't have to put it
He's
in
He's gotten
that
better. That's what I want to say. Yeah. He's gotten better. And after playing this offseason, after some of the struggles he had at times last year where he was not bad, but he struggled to start the season until about January. Then he took off, and then he had a really rough playoff series in five games against the Rockets. I didn't know which Donovan Mitchell we were going to get, and sounds like, according to Donovan, he didn't know what he was going to do either. He had times when he wondered, hey, was I a one-hit wonder my first year, and my second year I just kind of petered out and didn't get better? He's gotten much better. I mean, he's shooting the ball as well as we've ever seen him. And I know it's just 10 games, but his percentages right now, 45% from the three-point line, 48% from the floor, 24.6 points, 5 rebounds, 4 assists. Those are incredible numbers. The 4 assists are basically his career average. 5 rebounds a game is one up over his career average. Then again, he had that big 12-rebound game, I want to say, early in the season.
Yeah.
So that might throw it off a little bit. Maybe that number comes back. But I bet you we see him stay up around 24, 25 points a game.
When I think about him, and you've kind of argued against this, and again, this is perception maybe more than reality, and that is that he is a volume scorer who's inefficient, and you know the Jazz are not going to be able to survive if he's that guy. I think he's beat those at least expectations, or I should say he's kind of distance himself from that narrative, at least right now, that people have of him, is that he is not an efficient scorer. He's been extremely efficient. You've already talked about that. And I think that's maybe where people are grabbing on and saying, wait a minute, this guy's really good. He's really special. And I think that's maybe the surprise for me. I thought maybe he wouldn't shoot as well. I like the fact that he is shooting well, but he still feels the need every once in a while that, you know what, this is still my team. I can take over when I need to. But so far, that really hasn't happened a lot this season.
And even then, like a good example was against the Bucks. He had a couple of isolation possessions where I feel like in the past he probably would have just missed these shots, and he's just making those shots this year. I mean, tough step back 3-point shots with somebody with the defender right on him, and he's hitting them. And that is what the best players in the world do. LeBron hits those shots. James Harden hits those shots. Damian Lillard has always hit those shots, and that's who the Jazz need Donovan Mitchell to be at some points. I mean, they need him to hit impossible shots, and he's found a way to do that. And then what I think he's done a very nice job of is, through 10 games, we haven't seen, remember he did it a couple of times early in his career, he even had a couple last year, like a 4 of 23 game, or like 2 of 20, I think he went at one point. He's found a way to turn those into the Bucks game where he was 8 of 22. So that's not a great percentage. It's barely over 30%, but it's over 30%. And then the next night he'll go out and he'll go, you know, 7 of 11 or 7 of 12 or 10 of 16 and rebound to get that to about, you know, 45-50% between the two games. And that's what he needs to do. He needs to eliminate those awful, awful shooting games that he used to have. And if he can do that, it is a sign of his shot making. B, it's probably a sign of his decision making, where he stopped taking those 4 or 5 rush shots a game, which is a possession every quarter. Those add up. That can be really bad for an offense. So if he eliminates those 4 or 5 bad shots, and I think that's what we've seen through 10 games, that you're just going to see that progression continue to grow and that efficiency rise.
Speaking of poor shooting, a guy who started off shooting very poorly to start the season, and that's Mike Conley. He had a good game the other night against the Golden State Warriors, and he's had some good games. He's also had some, well, if you go back to that first game, yep, he only made one field goal, and he's had some bad games since then where he hasn't had any field goals, but you're starting to see him kind of pick up and kind of understand where he's supposed to be, understand what kind of role he's supposed to play, and understand how he's supposed to play in that system. And I'll go back to, let's go back to that Bucks game. Speaking of Mike Conley, I know it was Bojan Bogdanović, and we'll talk about him here in a second. I know it was Bojan Bogdanović that basically came out and said, hey, this is where I think I need to be. I think it was good also because Mike Conley totally recognized that and said, okay, if you're going to fill that role, and I know you're playing really good right now, I'm going to fill this other role, which is going to be potential decoy. But if it comes to me, I'll be prepared to shoot too. I think that you see that maturity in Mike Conley, and this is why you get him. Yep. Yeah, he's going to have poor shooting nights, but on the other hand, he's a leader. That's why you want him. And then there's going to be other nights where he's just going to be lights out like he played against the Clippers that first time.
Here's some funny numbers on Mike Conley. And first, let's just look at his first 4 games of the season, and that is where he struggled. First 4 games of the season, under 8 points a game, 4 assists, 2 rebounds, but he was shooting 20% from the floor and 15% from the 3-point line. Okay, those are horrendous numbers, and you can't do that, especially with as much money as he makes. His last 6 games, he's averaging 19 points a game, just a hair under 19 points, 4 assists, 3 rebounds, but he's shooting 45% from the floor and 49% from the 3-point line. I mean, and that's over 6 games now. I mean, that's the majority of his games so far this season, and that's in a streak. I mean, that's not just cherry-picking his best games. That's how he's been playing for the last 6. That's how good he's been. So this question about whether or not Mike Conley has arrived yet or if he's playing well, there's no doubt about it. He's playing brilliantly, especially over the last 6 games. And then it is funny to go back and just think of, like, this standard, this maybe impossible standard we're setting for Mike Conley, which is, how many bad games has he truly had? Now, he had a couple of bad shooting nights, and there's no doubt about that. He's not been super efficient, but games where he scored fewer than 10 points and games he scored more than 20 points, you would think, well, he's had way more single digits than he's had 20-point outings. No, he's had 3 and 3. He had an 8-point game, a 5-point game, and a 1-point game. But he's also had a 29-point game, a 22-point game, and a 20-point game. So he's had as many 20-point outings as he's had single-digit outings. And we're just 10 games into his new career with the Jazz. So I think we were anxious to see him perform brilliantly right out of the gate. And it's probably unrealistic that we set those expectations. He's since found the old Mike Conley, and he's been back, and he's been great. And he may just be a player that Jazz have to understand his rhythm a little bit, where he may not dominate all game long. He may be a guy who goes out and has a huge second quarter like he did against Milwaukee and hit four threes. Last night in the first half, he was really great and hit a bunch of threes and then was a little quieter in the second half. Maybe he's just that type of guy where he gets the most of his production in one stretch, and if that's the stretch you can build a huge lead on, then it's on the rest of the guys to maintain it, but he's good enough to do it.
And that's not a bad thing. When you go back to that Bucks game, the Jazz needed all of those points to try and fend off a really good team who's probably, or one of the favorites at least, in the Eastern Conference to make the NBA Finals. And so for him to go off in the second quarter, it would have been nice to see him score a little bit more in the second half. But again, if you don't have him go off in the second quarter and play as well as he does, he scored 19 of his 20 points in the first half, you're not going to be in a position to beat the Milwaukee Bucks on that night. So I think he's filling his role admirably. And I don't think you want him to be that guy who's your second leading scorer. You want him to be that guy who does a little bit of everything. And the reason they got him is because he can make outside shots and Ricky Rubio was not as effective. That's why you got Mike Conley, and he's a good leader. And really, he's a good dude, too. But so is Ricky Rubio.
Right.
So beyond that.
Sometimes you just need him to recognize what the defense is doing poorly and just destroy it. And that's really what he did last night. I mean, he was not out looking for his shot. He ran the pick and roll really well with Rudy Gobert. He's actually done okay in the pick and roll this year, but he has not found the lobs for Rudy. And I think Rudy himself wants to get those dunks and wants to feel those lobs. And I wrote an article about it at KSLSports.com. Within a 7-minute span, he threw three alley-oops or threw two alley-oops to Rudy Gobert and then threw another bounce pass that turned into a dunk. Those are the types of things that'll get Rudy going on the offensive side of the ball as well. And sometimes a point guard's job, much like a quarterback, is just to get everybody involved to make sure they're contributing what they can. And I think Mike Conley's getting there at this point.
We're going to talk about Boyan, Rudy, and the rest of the team after this break. Just a short break here on the Jazz Notes podcast. We'll talk about those things. Also, maybe talk about Gordon Hayward. And yes, we need to mention something about Dion Waiters. That's coming up next on the Jazz Notes podcast.
It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLPodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
All right, welcome back into the Jazz Notes podcast. Cleon Wall here, Ben Anderson. We're an eighth of the way through the season, 10 games basically. And we're just kind of going through if we're surprised, if the plays are right on track, or if we're a little disappointed. We've already talked about Donovan Mitchell. We talked about the team. We've talked about Mike Conley. Let's talk about Bojan Bogdanovic next. And then we're going to finish off with at least individual player-wise with Rudy Gobert. Let's talk about Bojan. I would probably say that he is... I'm going to say just right on track. Maybe I should be a little tainted by that Milwaukee Bucks game where he made the game winner, but I'd say he's about right on track. I think he's done everything I expected. I don't think he's over exceeded my expectations. I think he's just about right where I expected. Now, numbers wise, is he probably better than what he's been in his career? Yes. But on the other hand, I guess I just thought, he'll probably play a little bit better in the system. And I think he'll just be a little bit better player. For me right now, I'd say he's right on track to where I thought he'd be.
I think I'm surprised at his numbers because, I didn't think he would give you the Jazz 20 points a game. I thought he'd be around 17 or 18. And maybe by the end of the year, that drops back. But maybe it doesn't. Maybe he gets those types of looks with this Jazz team. What I'm surprised at is his passion and his care factor. And we were able to talk to George Niang at practice over the weekend. And I asked him if he was surprised at how good Bojan was. And he said no, because they saw him in OTAs. I loved what he said, though. He said, Bojan's got the best combination of cares and also doesn't care. Like, he cares about winning and he really wants to win. He's super competitive. He also doesn't care if he's playing poorly because he's still going to go out and take shots. And that was a good evidence against the Golden State Warriors where, 4 of 15? I mean, it was by far his worst shooting night for the Jazz so far this season. And he was still willing to take open shots, and that's what he has to do. He can't shy away from bad shots. I think sometimes we see that from Joe Ingles. Joe Ingles starts to get shy and say, you know, I don't need to take 12 shots if I didn't make the first four, if I didn't make the first three. No, you're a shooter. You got to keep putting that ball up. And I know Joe Ingles' role now on this team isn't to go out and try and score 20 every night the way it is for Bojan Bogdanović, but I do love that. Bojan catches the ball, and his thought is, I'm as good a scorer as anybody on this team, and I'm going to have a mismatch against my defender basically every possession down the floor. So I'm going to look to exploit that. And he's done that. And that's where he's been surprising to me. His competitiveness, his fire, his care factor, and maybe the fullness of his game. He can just do, he can dribble. He can pass a little bit. He really shoots the ball well. He finishes moving quickly at the rim. He's a crafty finisher. And then he's dunked on several people already. So he's been better than I expected him to be this year.
No, and that's fair. I'll go back to, let's go back to that Milwaukee game just real quickly, just very briefly. I guess the thing that kind of struck me in that game was it happened to him. He started out, he was playing pretty good, and then he started missing shots, but that didn't determine the third quarter. He got into the third quarter and he scored 10 points all by himself in a streak for the Jazz. He scored the Jazz 10 straight points for them. And I think I like the fact that he is able to do a little bit of everything. I like that. Even though he's a shooter and the Jazz want him to be a shooter, sometimes for him to get his shot, he goes to the basket.
Yes.
And he will dunk with impunity on just about anyone.
Did it on Brooke Lopez. He did it last night. I can't remember. Or on Eric Paschal. I mean, he's had a couple of good dunks already this season.
Yeah. So I'm still going to stick with my thing, but I like where he is. I like the spot that he's in right now, and he's filling his role well, and he knows what his role is. The Jazz know what his role is. The rest, and what I mean by that is the players know what his role is.
Yep.
They know he's supposed to be a scorer for this team, and he's lived up to that. Last of all, let's talk about Rudy when we talk about individual players. Rudy came out this season and he said, I think you need to get me the ball more. That was evidenced against the Golden State Warriors. They got him the ball more, and it paid off for him. He's the leading scorer on the team. He only misses one shot in that game. I don't know how to feel about him fully. I'm going to say I'm not sure. I want your thoughts on this. How do you think Rudy's gone? Because I think he's had some good games. I think he's had some bad games. Maybe I'm just wanting more out of Rudy, and I need to be a little bit more fair to him in wanting that out of him, because maybe that's not him, maybe that's not who he is, and maybe he's just had a few bad games, too.
No, I think Rudy's wanted the ball more, too. I mean, he said that. He said he wants more touches, and I think the Jazz have worked on that, and one of the things they said is, we got to get out and run more. If we run more, Rudy can score more, and we'll have more space dunking, and he's also actually not getting as many putback opportunities and putback dunks as he was last year, and I wonder if that's a result of defenders trying to grab defensive rebounds where Rudy's trying to grab an offensive rebound, no longer having to worry about Derek Favors, so they put an extra body on him. Or if the Jazz have honestly said, hey, Rudy, on missed offensive shots, we don't want you hanging out trying to grab the offensive board. Since we're smaller than we were last year, we need you to run back down the floor and grab defensive rebounds or go back to play defense and set up. I wonder if that's a scheme thing that Quinn Snyder has set up because they were worried about how they would be without Favors. I think that'll play itself out throughout the season. Gobert, though, has been fantastic defensively after the really bad start to the preseason, the first four games. I mean, they were just horrendous defensively. The Jazz are still the number one team. I think they've been number one maybe outside of the first game, but even then they only gave up 95 points to the Thunder in the season opener. The Jazz are still the number one defensive team in the league and have been that way through the first 10 games, and there's nobody I'm on the team looking at playing great defense other than Rudy Gobert. And certainly Royce is very good and Donovan Mitchell's taken a major step forward in that sense. But Rudy is still the reason the Jazz are the number one defense in the league. And that's what he does. I mean, he's a 2-time defensive player of the year. So in that sense, I love that he's still giving you that. And then he'll get more 20-point games throughout the year like he did against the Warriors.
And that's why I think I'm being unfair. I hold Rudy up here and I'm thinking, this is where I want you to be. And in the meantime, because of that, I'm not recognizing the fact that, hey, you know what? He's really good right now,
yeah,
especially on defense and especially getting rebounds. He's your main rebounding presence. And I like that he has a little bit of a nasty streak in him, too.
No
so I'm probably unfairly giving him not a bad grade. I'm just I want more from Rudy, and I think he'll give that the rest of the season. All right, rest of the team, what do you think?
Solid. I mean, basically, you're getting what you want. I know Ingles isn't scoring the way people want, but he's doing an excellent job coming off the bench and just kind of being whatever the Jazz need him to be. I love the role Royce O'Neal's playing in the starting lineup. He'll have games where he doesn't take a shot. He's had a game against the Warriors where he only took one shot, and he's still out there playing really hard. He really helped slow down D'Angelo Russell after his hot start. You need that guy to go out, grab four rebounds, get four assists, and not have to take shots to still play his role. I love that. And then Emmanuel Mudiay's probably been my surprise. He's been better than I expected him to be.
I'll add, those are the three guys that I was thinking of too, but I'll add one more. I don't think any of us expected a lot out of Tony Bradley this year, and I'm not sure what we're going to get the rest of the season from him. And I noticed when the Jazz played against the Sixers, you know, Joel Embiid was just torching him. But I'll say one thing about Tony Bradley. He works his tail off. He is hustling out there, and I'm not just talking about it on the offensive end. He is trying really hard to be an NBA player, and he's accepted his role well. And I think he deserves, I'm not going to say he deserves more minutes, but maybe when Ed Davis comes back, maybe don't go automatically back to him. Maybe Tony Bradley by that time, maybe, I'm going to use that caveat, maybe by that time you're going to say, you know what, we need to give Tony Bradley a few more minutes. I'm going to say he's the one that, more than anyone, that surprised me. He really goes out there and busts his butt every single night that he's on the floor, even if he's not the most skilled guy in the world, at least when it comes to shuffling his feet on defense.
If you're not seeing a great game from Ed Davis, and he's been so far, I think, in his career, and I know he broke his leg, so it's hard to judge there. But yeah, I mean, I think you're getting as much from Tony Bradley as you were from Ed Davis, and I like the way he uses his big body. He's not afraid to use it and grabs offensive rebounds, and that's what Ed Davis does too. So I agree with you. Good point that he's been terrific.
And I liked how he played against Joel Embiid. I know he struggled against him, not only on the defensive end, but on the offensive end, just because Embiid is so long, and he struggled a little bit against the Bucks too. Maybe that's the one I'm thinking. I think I'm thinking of the Bucks game, but I just like his, you talked about care factor. I like Tony Bradley's care factor.
Yep.
He knew what, I think he wanted more playing time when he came in. They said, we're not going to give that to you automatically. And he has just slowly worked his way up. And I think that the Jazz are really starting to see that pay off, and it could pay off the rest of the season. All right, Gordon Hayward, man, what's up with this? I mean, talk about an unfortunate break, and we're talking about him breaking his hand on a screen being set. When I heard he broke his hand, I thought, well, what was it, you know, like caught in the net going for
too.
A dunk or something like that?
Or smashed in between a player, because it said, LaMarcus Aldridge set a back screen on him, and he broke his hand. And I thought, okay, I could see that. You know, you turn, your hand gets caught up in it and folds over. Not at all. I mean, he kind of puts his hand on Aldridge, pulls it off, and then runs into him with his forearm, but broke his hand somewhere, had to get surgery.
The reason why I wanted to bring this up is I know a lot of Jazz fans out there, they're just like, stop talking about Gordon Hayward. Listen, I feel bad for this guy. I actually liked him as a player. I never saw him as an A1 player out there, your top banana player, but I thought he was good. I was disappointed when he left. I don't have anything mean to say about him. He wanted to make a life decision. He made a life decision, and I really feel bad for him. The first year he goes and joins the Celtics, he breaks his leg. And
5 minutes into the game.
5 minutes into the first game. Second year, he's just not himself because he's trying to come back from that injury, and now we're less than 10 games into the season.
And he was playing great.
Exactly. He was playing the way you expected him to play when he went to Boston, and he goes down with another injury. You can hate on him all you want. I feel bad for the guy. He was a good guy. Not always the greatest interview, but but he was a good player, and he was good to... I just feel bad for him. I guess that's what I'm trying to say. Finally, the last thing on the Jazz Notes podcast, Dion Waiters. What in the heck is going on with Dion Waiters? And is he even going to play for the Miami Heat? He felt weird. He had a bad tummy. That's the report from ESPN. He had a bad tummy.
Yeah.
So he takes some edible marijuana.
Yep.
He freaks out.
Yep.
Or at least that's what we're hearing. He kind of freaks out. No one knows what's going on. And now it's released that, and they say, well, we're going to suspend him 10 games, even though he hasn't played this season. First of all, just what was he thinking? What was he thinking in doing all this? I would have to go back to saying it has to be disappointment. He's disappointed he's not playing right now.
He hasn't played. He came into camp out of shape. It's somewhat got to be rebellious, you know, of how he's treating. And honestly, I have no idea how common this is or uncommon this is on an NBA team. Not guys passing out and having seizures, and as scary as that was, where they had to get medical personnel involved. But I have no idea how common that type of thing is on an NBA roster. But bad and good. I mean, serious enough that it could end his career.
And that's what I'm wondering. I mean, I'm sitting there saying, I don't know if he plays for the Heat again. I doubt he plays for the Heat again. I'm just not sure who's going to pick him up from here on out.
Well, they suspended him 10 games. They could bring him back after that, but they didn't want to play him when he was healthy. You know, before his suspension, they didn't want to play him. So I don't know if they feel, and they're playing pretty well this year, so they may not want to throw that type of player into the roster and mix things up. And he's not a very efficient scorer. So maybe he never plays for the Heat again. And then, I mean, we've seen it. Guys who even have somewhat questionable personality or buy-in with their team, they just don't play anymore. J.R. Smith's not in the league right now. Carmelo Anthony's not in the league. And those guys are both probably more talented than Dion Waiters is. And are less of a headache, in all honesty. I mean, J.R. Smith threw a bowl of soup. Carmelo Anthony wanted to start. Deion Waiters almost died, it sounds like, on an airplane from taking an edible. So maybe he doesn't play again. Yeah, it's going to be a wild next few weeks for his career.
China, here he comes.
Yeah, right.
I guess we'll have to wait and see. Ben Anderson, thank you very much. Thanks for listening to the Jazz Notes podcast. We'll be back on Thursday with another Jazz Notes podcast. We'll recap what happened in the Jazz Brooklyn game and get you ready for the weeks ahead. And that's right here on the Jazz Notes podcast, sponsored by... That's not sponsored by anyone. Let's just be honest with ourselves. It's brought to you by KSLSports.com. We'll talk to you soon.
I'm Dave Cauley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.